Within this podcast, topics relating to art history, cultural policy, the art sector, as well as a large range of other art-related topics will be covered. Conducting critical discussions, having entertaining exchanges, or just enjoying some relaxing join in the world makes the further production, improvement, and growth of the podcast possible. And for that, I'm incredibly grateful. And now, on to the interview.
Welcome to the podcast, Adele. You are the founder of Artie Stellar Gallery, a gallery that was nomadic at first, but now has a space in Mayfair that shows emerging contemporary artists. But before we get on talking about that, can you tell me about your background? What did you study, and where have you worked in the art world before embarking on your own endeavor?
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me, and thanks for the first question. I did a BA that was actually a joint degree, which means that I didn't really have a major. So I was doing business management and languages. Mm-hmm. And then I had lots of electives and I ended up choosing lots of art history courses or modules. And that actually led me to really start thinking about pursuing art in the future. And then I continued a master's in art business at Sotheby's Institute. Mm-hmm. And then I went through the traditional path of having internships in galleries. Then after a year or so, I got my first gallery assistant job at Pace. And
I didn't know you worked at Pace.
Yes. It was actually really brief. It was about 3, 4, or 5 months, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Sotheby's right away after.
Yeah, which is where we met.
And that's where we met.
The bids department. Yeah. Wonderful. Okay. Did you start off in the bids department at Sotheby's?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Straight to bids.
Nice. And why did you decide to start your gallery? How did you go about it?
I was always really interested in entrepreneurship. And, you know, I would be really fascinated by success stories and founders and entrepreneurs in general. I would be reading a lot of books about it, and it didn't matter what industry, but in general, you know, people building something from scratch. That was always something that really interested me. You know, it was sort of like a dream. Yeah, maybe one day I'll do something on my own, but I didn't really know when or what and how it's going to happen. And then while being at Sotheby's and having that job, I would always do lots of side projects. I would start running my sort of art blog, or
how
to call that.
I remember. What was it? AS Art Journal, which we'll talk about later.
We will get to that. That was one of the projects. Then I was also starting to run this kind of networking group with a friend of mine for people in the art world. So that was a thing for a while. I was also doing studio visits and just, you know, things on the side for fun. And I also started like buying smaller artworks for myself. So that was the beginning of my art collecting journey. So there was always something on the side. Yeah, then I just merged these things together. And then when I left Sotheby's, that was actually the beginning of COVID. I felt like the whole world kind of stopped and it gave me the chance to kind of step back and think about, you know, what should I do? What's the next move? Mm. So I took that time to think about forming, you know, proper idea. And, you know, I felt like so many people during COVID just went on like a bit of an adventure and it started things that they didn't really, you know, expect it to start in the first place. So I think that was kind of an element that really pushed me to think about the concept of Artie Stellar, and I started developing the platform. The thing was that at the beginning, the idea was a bit different to what it is now. So I started it as an online platform, and I was obviously basing it on the current situation and, you know, lockdown and everything, and the world art world not functioning the way that it was. So I started it online, but then slowly I started adjusting it to the situation, the situation in the world, the situation in the art market. And I came up with the nomadic concept. I had my first pop-up and then the second pop-up. So there was lots of transitions happening. But I think the core of the business, like its mission, is still kind of stayed the same. I always wanted to create something that would be focused on primarily on emerging artists, but that would take down all the regular barriers of art collecting and like seeing art, because there's so much stigma around that, and so much of this kind of white cube and intimidating atmosphere that people have when they interact with art or when they want to start buying art. So this is something that, you know, was the initial idea of Artisteller. It's just that the path was a bit more colorful. It started online, it went through the nomadic kind of setting, and now it developed into regular physical gallery.
Yeah. Did you, in that first year, how was it? But did you like develop a business plan? Did you have that? Or did you kind of just think, this is what I want and I'm going to figure it out and strategically just kind of, I don't know, see where, like, you know, that,
right, oh God,
I was going to say that really like cheesy saying of like, you shoot for the moon and you land among the stars. But like, did you shoot for the moon and then somehow like land amongst the stars in a way? God, that sounds so cheesy.
I think you can sort of say that.
Yeah.
So obviously I did develop a business plan and, you know, I worked really on the idea and I did followed all the steps you're supposed to follow when you're trying to start something.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the core was like, okay, it's going to be online. It's going to be an online platform. And I did not know that it's going to, you know, develop into what I developed. I took it as it went.
Yeah.
But I think it's also part of running a business. You have to adjust it to what's happening. You have to try and see what works and what doesn't work. And I think that's what happened. Being online worked back then during COVID. It was great. And artists wanted to do that and collectors wanted to do that. But with world coming back to normal slowly, you know, I had to adjust and see what worked better and things like that. So, yeah, I think there were so many elements that contributed to the transition or, you know, the development of the business. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, just kind of applying that same thought or that same process to the All About Art podcast. Like when I started, it was, if I did any interviews, it was over Zoom.
Mm.
But mostly I did a lot of episodes on my own. Like I didn't really know where it was going to take me. And then I got another microphone so that I could do interviews with someone else. And then now it's developed to the point where I'm sitting with you in a podcast studio and, you know, I conduct interviews as like 90% of all of my content on the podcast. So I understand it's a bit different when it's a whole business than just, you know, just quote unquote a project like this one. But I understand having to be flexible, especially because of COVID, that really forced us to be more flexible. How do you think having a space and putting on exhibitions has changed how you work and what you need to spend your time focusing on? Like, do you think that having a physical space has had a positive effect on your collector base and your relationships with artists?
It has helped in many, many ways. Yeah, just to start with that kind of positive outcome. For sure, putting physical shows together has enabled me to work with lots of interesting artists and, you know, artists that would not be willing to maybe participate in an online show, but they're open to and want to participate in physical shows. So it kind of gave me this broader spectrum of artists and working with, you know, feeling comfortable approaching artists that I want to work with. And also the putting the physical show together and curating it is a completely different experience than just putting sort of, if I exaggerate, images online. So that's the most exciting part for me, probably, to really put the show together, to have a concept and to hang the works on the walls and like have the show there. And then the third part is that you really get to meet people in person and connect with them. So you get visitors, you can talk to them, you can talk to your collectors when they come and visit, you can have a direct contact. So all these were incredible benefits that the physical space brought me. What was more on the negative side is it is more stressful. There's a lot of logistic going into it. That is, it's more complicated from the logistic point of view. And it's also more financially difficult than running a website, obviously.
Yeah.
So the choice of artists had to also not suffer, but like had to adjust.
Yeah, you can't be as flexible.
Exactly.
When you have to, I mean, even just the logistic thinking of what can size-wise fit on these walls and what can we hang in terms of weight or what type of sculpture if we're, like, I'm thinking of your space right now, which is on the first floor. You can't have super heavy sculpture. You know, it's all of these things that you have to think about when you're then in that physical space. But if you're online, you have a broader spectrum. You have more freedom in that way. You don't have to think about these things.
Exactly. You can. I felt like I was experimenting way more. And, you know, that it was great about having the online space because you could experiment. You can find a completely unknown artist and just put it out there and see what happens. But with curating shows in a physical space, you really have to be a bit more mindful of what show, what artist. It's sort of a balance that I'm trying to have, to keep, you know, keep finding and exhibiting artists that I believe in and that I find exciting, but also trying to look at it from the business perspective. So I need to look at the aspect of, can these artists sell well, or is there a market for them? So it's really, really thin kind of, it's
a tightrope walk. Exactly. It's a balance, because you, as a small gallery, it's amazing to be able to have that freedom to pick the artists. But then you have to think, because I'm a small gallery, this has to be commercially viable enough to sustain.
Exactly.
And that is the business mindset that we unfortunately, like, I think in the arts, we are incredibly fun and open and creative. But because of the society we live in and how we conduct business and how the world works, we need to have a business mindset too, especially as, like, gallerists, maybe not so much curators, but people who have to run these businesses. You have to think that way as well. It's walking that tightrope of, like, bringing in both sides. Definitely.
100% agree.
I would love to talk about the transition of being a blogger, having run your art account called AS Art Journal, which is something that we mentioned very early on in this episode, and garnering a large following on Instagram to then becoming a business owner. I know that you and I have talked about the positives of having cultivated that community online and the network that you can build through that. That obviously has, you know, a lot of positive side effects. It's something that has a lot of pros. That's why a lot of people always say, like, building a community online is so great. However, we have also acknowledged the negative sides of this, with the risks of not being taken seriously or feeling like people see you as a quote-unquote artfluencer instead of an entrepreneur, as if you can't be both, because you can, but just saying, people can be judgy. Because that is also often something that women who have a presence online, but who also have their own businesses, have to contend with. So could you tell me if this is something that has affected you or what your thoughts are on this subject and maybe how you deal with it?
Exactly as you said before, I see the art world as kind of a spectrum where you can be curator, a collector, a writer, or you can be an artist, a collector, and curator, and writer. You can be so many things, and one person being so many things, because all these different fields go in hand in hand. And I feel like people are sometimes not really understanding of that, or they don't see it that way. And what happens is that when they get used to seeing a certain way, it's hard to change it. So I guess because the first point where they kind of became aware of my presence, or how to say, was through Instagram, if they didn't know me from somewhere else. So mostly Instagram. And they kind of, you know, established, okay, she's sharing art all the time and she's posting a lot. And then kind of, like, you know, she has a following. So it became an art influencer thing. And in the world of, like, influencers being everywhere and everyone who shares something is an influencer these days, I think it just, you know, people kind of applied that to it. But what I kind of initially tried to do with the Instagram, there was no intention of becoming an influencer or any sort of thing. It was always just to share my passion, to have a channel and or outlet to share what I like in the art world. And, you know, it just happened to grow and get following. And, you know, I was having fun experimenting with, like, posing next to artworks for scale or matching with them or something like that.
Yeah, your outfits are, I mean, it's that mixture also of fashion and art. So this creativity as well with self-expression.
It's exactly how I saw it. But as with everything else, you know, you'll always get people that will be judgy.
But like, especially as a woman, like, I'm sorry. Exactly. But like, it's all about how, you know, women are consistently objectified. And then when we decide to present ourselves in a certain way, we could go on forever. Like, I don't want to go 100%. Down that route necessarily, but like, you get ostracized as a woman, however you decide to present yourself. And so if you're having fun with that form of self-expression and you're matching with the artworks and you're looking fabulous and you're garnering a great following while doing that, all the more power to you. You know what I mean? Like, I don't condone that type of like judgment.
I agree, but it's sometimes hard.
Yeah.
Just reminds me that once I posted a kind of like a picture of me posing in front of something and I do not know what was in the caption, but someone commented, "Oh, you call yourself a curator? What, you're posing in front of art and you're a curator?" I'm like, "You don't even know what I do. Like, how do you commenting that I? How is it related? First of all, you don't know me in person. You don't know anything. Like, what is this comment?" So you know,
was it a man?
I think so, probably. I don't remember. It was a while ago, but probably.
Yeah. I just think it's funny how. Because I don't necessarily fit into your idea of what a curator should be or look like or sound like. And this is with anything when it comes to like representation in the arts, when it also comes to gender, ethnicity, background, all of these different things. It's like, you can be whatever and people, like, unless you're hurting someone else, like, just let people be.
It's a paradox because you feel like you have this platform where people follow you, so you want to share. And, you know, I keep wanting sharing what I like in the art because it's, you know, who I am and the part of what I do. And that's how I also, you know, how I curate my eye or how my eye, how to see art kind of became.
Yeah.
And
it's through seeing all that.
It's through seeing all that. So it is part, but I think it's... For people, it's hard to see it that way. And then I also feel, I don't want to kind of abandon that. But at the same time, I feel like I should be using the platform to, you know, push or, you know, promote what I actually do for a living and, you know, promote my gallery and talk about it. But it's sometimes difficult to kind of merge these things together because, as I said before, I feel people see you a certain way. And sometimes it's hard to overcorrect that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, at the moment it's just like trying to create the balance and really, you know, just keep it going.
Yeah. When you start to garner a larger following, like, you must have to have had to learn how to deal with these comments, because I think like if someone has like a few hundred followers, a few thousand followers, you don't necessarily get that response of like, "You call yourself a curator? Like, what the hell? Who do you think you are?" And the bigger you get, or I guess the larger your following becomes, the more you're going to have to deal with the haters, the negative comments and all of that, the negative DMs. But I also wanted to ask you kind of in tandem with that, like, how did you deal with that? But also, did your platform grow very steadily, or was it like it kind of took off? Like, you did it at a certain point where... That was something where you garnered a lot of followers quite quickly and you had to learn how to deal with that.
So it was actually very, I would say, steady. I started a long time ago. I think it was really soon after my master's when I actually went to one of my first art fairs. Back then, I only had like a private Instagram account, you know, with like vacation and family pictures and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I went to like the art fair. I was like, "Oh my God, I love this. I want to, you know, I want to show it to the world that I love this and this is an amazing piece of art." And then, so, you know, so I would post it on my personal account and I got like 3 likes and clearly none of my friends cared. So I was like, "Okay, what if I create a different page, different profile and start posting that?" There, just art, whatever wherever I go and what I see, I would post what I like and, you know, comment why I like it. And this is how it happened. So that was a long time ago. And then just like start gaining followings and it just, you know, steadily grew. I didn't really do any super tricks or anything. Sometimes you feel like there's pressure to follow the trend, like create reels and things like that. So yes, I do try to create reels more than I would like to.
You kind of have to nowadays. Like if you don't create any reels, like... I mean, but also it is kind of fun to create. Like, I have fun creating reels. Like, I do the come with me too. Like, that's kind of fun. So, like, yeah. Okay, I'm not that mad. But I'm not doing any dances.
Oh, my God, no. No.
Yeah.
Still trying to stay, you know, true to what Instagram is, to showing pictures. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Videos can be definitely fun. Yeah. But yeah, to answer your question, I don't think there was any sudden boom on anything. It was just, yeah, really steady.
Yeah. I guess that's where if you started an Instagram a few years ago, like let's say a decade ago or something like that, it is a completely different landscape in comparison to today.
Mm.
But also, like when you say, you know, you didn't really follow trends or there's not really too much that you felt like you needed to do, it was just a steady sharing with the world. And now I think it's completely like even pre-pandemic versus now, the social media landscape is completely different.
That's so true.
It's just so interesting to talk about it and talk to someone who kind of built their following like you did a bit earlier on. And how you dealt with that. Did you ever, I'm actually going to take this question from the panel talk. So we're recording this after the All About Art anniversary weekend, which you took part in. Thank you for that, by the way.
It was so much fun.
And we also had panel talks on the Sunday and Monday. And I had three amazing women who work in the arts on the panel on Sunday talking about presenting yourself online. And one of the questions that I asked these women was, did you ever have an employer have an issue with your online presence? Like, how would it affect someone's hireability later down the line, do you think?
That's a very good question, actually, because I feel like I've kind of experienced something myself when I was actually applying for a job at Sotheby's back then. I already had my Instagram back then, and I felt very kind of self-conscious about having the Instagram, and I didn't really want to share it with anyone. And I felt very, I didn't share it with anyone, but eventually my colleagues would come across it. You know, they would see it on Instagram, and they would see it and, you know, either start following me or commenting on it. No one ever said anything in bad about it.
Okay, that's good.
But I felt like I definitely felt I was being judged.
Okay.
I don't know, from those little comments and, you know, that people sometimes have. But I don't know. I might be just, you know, reading too much into it.
No, I get what you mean. I get what you mean. And it's not like, I'm not saying, but no, I do. Because sometimes it's these comments where you're not really sure, like, these comments make it clear all of a sudden that you are visible to people.
Yeah.
And you aren't necessarily always that aware of how visible you are to people, how people are interacting with your content. And then all of a sudden you have these comments and they're not overwhelmingly positive, but they're also not negative. They're just kind of like a comment. And then you're like, I don't know how to feel about that, but I feel very visible. I feel very like seen, but not like I feel seen. It's like I feel watched in a way.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I can totally see the point how people might feel on the when you're someone who is applying for a job and you have a social media presence, you might feel that way. I mean, you might have people that might feel actually overly confident when they have a big following and they might be selling it in the interview, like, look, I already have this amazing,
yeah,
amazing platform or amazing following, but I'm not that kind of person.
Yeah.
I guess it always depends on what kind of personality you are and what point of view you have on it. But I was never that person. And if I look at it from the other perspective, as me being the employer and looking for a new employee.
That's what I want to know as well.
Yeah. So I don't think, because I know how it feels, I would definitely not have a problem with that. I would, it's not a factor that I would count in. I would not see it as a, oh my God, this person has a great following, I have to hire them. Or like, oh my God, they have social media presence, I don't want to hire them, they're too revealing that you're doing that. Definitely not. If something, it would be probably a very positive thing that they have it, but I wouldn't try to be, you know, I would try to be, not to be biased if they have it. Okay, yeah. I'm going to hire them.
Yeah. Of course, of course. I think, like, what I did when I was applying for the job, or when I went and spoke to the people who ended up hiring me at the gallery I work at, I was very transparent because I have heard other stories of people who have side projects and things like podcasts or blogs or Instagrams and whatnot. And I was transparent and I said, look, I have a podcast where I interview people. I work with galleries. I work with organizations. I work with singular individuals. But like, is that a problem? And they were like, as long as you don't slander this gallery, you can do whatever you want. And they're also very encouraging and very lovely about it. So it also depends on who you're working for, like what the reputation of it is. And like with Sotheby's, for example, they ended up doing a whole, like during the pandemic when I was there, where you had actually already gone, during these like meetings, we were all very encouraged to build our social media presence. And staff at Sotheby's, like the specialists, were very encouraged to be building their social media presence because it was wonderful to be able to share their knowledge and all of these things that they have learned throughout their years of building the expertise that they have. And Sotheby's wanted to present that as well. And I think that that's, number one, a really good way to reach people and make knowledge a bit more accessible. And number two, it's a really great business idea. Like it's a good approach to things. But at the same time, I think, you know, as we said before, it's ever evolving. So even 5 years ago, when someone could have been really negative about it, 3 years ago, that all changed.
Completely. It's crazy because it's like, you know, make up your mind, people.
Yeah, exactly. Gosh, you judge me and then you want me and then no. You don't. And then
exactly. Like if I think for the art world, especially Instagram is an incredible tool. It's basically free marketing. Why would you not use it?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's for any business, but especially for the art world because it's all visual based. Like you need that. And yeah, completely agree.
Yeah.
I think it's just people always like to judge.
People do. I think. And like, I do understand where people can pick apart Instagram. Because God knows that I sit on Instagram sometimes, and because I use it professionally, I don't get this like FOMO of like going to parties or like wearing certain clothes or whatever that I think a lot of people feel when they're on Instagram looking at other content. But what then happens to me is I end up feeling imposter syndrome because I'm seeing these highlight reels of people's careers and think, wow, how successful. And it's basically, you know, all of these tropes of Instagram where they're like, this is how it can affect your mental health. I'm like, no, it's not going to happen to me because I use it for my career. So it's a professional tool. And then I sit there and I'm like, I'm not good enough, you know? And
oh my God. That's the downside of Instagram for sure. I think we just need to learn how to take things not that seriously. You cannot really... Don't believe everything you see on Instagram, basically.
Yeah. 100% do not believe everything you see on Instagram.
Yeah. Everyone likes to over-exaggerate and like present things all nice and shiny. And yeah, it's all never like that.
Ooh, some people more than others, most
definitely.
So I have my penultimate question that I'm going to ask you. Because another challenge as someone who like does their own thing in the art world is the issue of copying. And you and I have talked with one another privately about it. And we said that we wanted to maybe touch on it in the episode because of how you and I have learned how to deal with it. We both had a certain approach. Of course, there will always be something that is similar to you or you're doing something that someone else has done before. So I'm not really talking about like that type of thing. But sometimes, unfortunately, it's incredibly blatant and it's too close for comfort when someone really just, you feel uncomfortable because of the way that they are, I guess, emulating you. Can you tell me about your experiences with it and how you keep focused on your path when someone does something that resembles your work to the point where it crosses the line of copying?
This is a very passionate topic for me.
Oh, yeah, good. Ooh.
I mean, as you say, it's very hard to, in this world, to be obviously original and come up with something that hasn't been done before. We all take inspiration in something and yeah, this is just the way it is.
Yeah.
But when it gets to a point when people literally copy every single move you do, then it's a bit too much. And it has happened to me in two different ways. Oh, I mean, very similar ways. It's just from two different kind of
sources.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one, and I don't know which one is the worst. The first is a person that would start copying basically the same concept of sort of when I had the nomadic concept of the gallery. So copying that concept and literally coming to the opening and talking to me directly and asking questions how I pull it off. And I was stupidly replying and telling them everything. And then 2-3 months down the line, suddenly the person opens the same gallery with the same kind of mission. It literally said the same mission in the bio. And rents out the same space for an exhibition and puts almost the same artist there. Basically, 2 or 3 were the same and then the rest was a bit different. Mm-hmm. But anyway, if it's like that, that's just too obvious. And the second instance was when an entity or business that is, let's say, okay, directly gallery that is either a competitor or a little bit more established, mm-hmm. established kind of copies a show that you did. So again, few months down the line, they suddenly have the same group show with the same artist and almost the same name.
The same group show with the same artist.
Yes. So, and like that has happened. And
oof.
I'm not going to name any names, obviously. And the worst part about this is that no one can really see that unless they follow follow your gallery and your business and the other business, because you know it's a big sea, so it's really hard to see, and people would not realize unless they are so heavily involved in it and then they see it the way that you see it. And people also like to forget, so what the person that kind of brings something new or starts a trend, if I kind of like call it a trend, you never remember. The person that like comes and pushes it up next or like steals it from you, then people start noticing, but they were not going to remember who started it in the first place, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's kind of like the most frustrating part, that like, this happens. I don't know. You cannot really do much about it.
Yeah. It's not like you could go to them and then be like, hey, you're putting on the same show. Did you do that? Or were you just like, I have to professionally like take a step back here. Like what am I going to do? Like,
so that my first response to this is always like very emotional. And I always have like people then say like, oh, look, it's a great compliment. I'm like, well, that's nice. That's a compliment, but I'm not benefiting from it. Right. I'm just the one that like, it really doesn't matter if it's a compliment or not. So, I'm just hoping that, karma is, dot, dot, dot.
We can cuss on this podcast. Karma's a bitch.
Exactly. Yeah. And that, I get ways to talk about this issue. Like, for example, now I have the chance to talk about it and I'm happy that I can talk about it, at least this way.
Yeah, I mean, you and I bonded over it because I had an experience, but it was with an individual who I worked with, and I had a different approach. I spoke to them about it and we kind of sorted it out. I don't know if that allowed the relationship to stay the same. I don't really think it did. But at the same time, the relationship was changing its dynamic anyway because I was getting progressively more and more frustrated with how that was happening. But I guess it's different if you know the person, if you work with the person, if you're kind of more close to that person, than if it's a completely different entity or like a business and you've only spoken to them at like your private view or something like that. It's a bit of a different situation. This isn't about being inspired. This isn't about doing something, because as we said before, there is probably nothing that we are doing that is fully 100% original that hasn't been done before. Like 100%. This podcast has probably, I haven't found one that's exactly like it, but there are episodes that are probably super similar to other episodes that have come out. Like you've been on a podcast before. Like I'm not original in interviewing you. My questions are original, but like, you know what I mean? There are similarities, sure, yeah. But I'm not copying the person that interviewed you. You know what I mean? Like, but if you, so do you actually exclusively represent any artists?
So at the moment...
Or not necessarily exclusively, but like, do you represent any?
Yes, currently only one. Mm-hmm. And then with a few other I have a very close relationship with. I cannot call it representation, but it's like something that, you know, built on trust and working together on a regular basis.
Yeah. And I think that like in the art world, it's quite well known that if you are a gallery and you are going to exhibit the artist that is in some way represented by another gallery, that out of common courtesy, you just give them a heads up before you do that. And in a lot of cases, you actually collaborate with them on shows, depending on where you're located, where they have their representation. Like there is a whole entire like infrastructure for these things. Like this is why when you get to a certain point, like you don't have the same shows over and over, because these galleries, you know, they're all connected in certain ways and a lot of them speak to one another. And like, you know, you have one artist being exhibited in this group show, but then you have to give that gallery a head, like the gallerist a heads up, like, hey, by the way, we have this artist in the show. And they're like, yeah, cool. But it's just like a respect thing.
So I completely 100% agree with this. And I'm all for collaboration and partnerships between galleries.
Yeah.
And I think that's how it should be. Even though you represent an artist, now I represent one and I'm already, you know, trying to work with other galleries and push for the artist to work with other galleries because, you know, you want to help the artist and yeah. like help build the market and everything. But shockingly, there's still so many galleries that are very, how to say, they're really protecting their own territory and they represent their artist and they don't allow them to work with anyone else. And there's an artist that I actually discovered. It was one of my, in my first year of running out to Stellar, and I did a solo online show with her. And afterwards, we had a great relationship and we promised we were going to work together again. But, in, you know, somehow she got signed in by a gallery that acted as a agent as well. So yeah, full representation. And then the gallery never allowed her to work with anyone else. And until this day, she basically hasn't done any other shows but with that gallery. And I find that outrageous.
Yeah.
Because it's not good for the artist either. And I do not understand, because why would you not want to help the artist and work with other galleries? But yeah, this is drifting off to another whole topic.
It's really interesting and it's really enriching. And yeah, I definitely find it really a really important topic to touch on. But I do have one final question to round off the episode. And this is a question that I ask all of my guests on the All About Art podcast. And it is, if you could pick one artist from art history, or I sometimes get flexible and allow from contemporary times as well, to have dinner with, who would it be and why?
I love that you asked this question. So I think as a supporter of women artists and as the gallery also focuses heavily on women artists, it would be Joan Mitchell. Mm-hmm. She is my all-time favorite female artist. And she's also from my all-time favorite art movement. And on the top of all of that, she was very influenced by Monet, which is my sort of like art god. So it's like the perfect constellation of things.
Yeah.
And I would just love to sit down with her. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Have a little bit of wine.
Exactly.
Maybe even combine it with like a painting session.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. What a vibe. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and for sharing your opinions, your insights, and your experiences with me. And thanks again.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really, really interesting. Thank you.
And that is it for today on All About Art. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave me a rating or a review, as it helps more people discover the show. Also, feel free to share with your friends, or if you share on social media, tag me and get in touch. Thank you so much for listening.